The saying goes, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But what if you don't have access to fresh produce where you live? Or transportation to the doctor if that apple doesn't work? Or someone to watch your kids while you're at the doctor? Or, you get the point. A person's success in managing their health and wellness may depend much less on what happens inside of a doctor's office than what happens outside of it. There's plenty about where we are born, grow, live, and work, and how these circumstances are shaped by access to resources that influence the health we can achieve. There's a name for it: social determinants of health. So as a community, how might we begin to address these social determinants? How might we make progress towards reducing health disparities and improving health equity? How do we create a future where people receive support to stay well, rather than just treating them when they are sick? It starts with research. It starts with conversations. It starts with listening. It starts with understanding. Supporting people in their journey to good health is part of how we can create a better world. I'm Ellen Beckjord. Good Health, Better World is a show about how stronger communities begin with good health for everyone, even outside the doctor's office. In episode 5, we hear from Sarah Rosso, Executive Director of the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation, and Shireen Hack, Program Director in UPMC Health Plan's National Network Development and Strategic Expansion Team.
But first, let's listen to a short field report by Post Industrial Media.
If you have historically been marginalized and treated poorly, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you to ask for help, for you to speak up for yourself. If you are transgender and you're trying to, you know, find housing in a shelter that's going to be accepting of you, it can become very scary. A lot of people have very similar lived experiences, even if their labels aren't the same, of just, you know, being rejected, being avoided. My name is Coley Alston. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I'm the program director at the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation. So the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation primarily serves the LGBTQ and HIV communities here in Pittsburgh. I work with a lot of children who are in foster care and a lot of young people who have recently exited the foster care system. And I'm seeing similar effects of housing instability there. I will say especially I'm concerned about social isolation, especially for LGBTQ youth, who are in foster care, who have families who are not accepting, not affirming, or who are in places where they really can't access even something like the internet or other online communities where they could feel supported. We've had a lot of opportunities at Hugh Lane to have interactions with young people as they would like to have interactions, you know, where they can drop in and drop out. And we also do have group sessions that are based in cognitive behavioral therapy around how do you navigate your space and your environment when you may be somewhere that is not very affirming, not very accepting, and really giving them tools to kind of deal with that type of stress, basically help them advocate for themselves as far as their mental and sexual well-being.
Thank you, Sarah Rosso, for joining us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. Sarah is the executive director of the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation, which is based here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And she also serves on the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs. So welcome, Sarah.
Hey, thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation and the work that you do in serving the LGBTQ plus community?
So the Hugh Lane Wellness Foundation exists to improve the health of the LGBTQ and HIV communities across the region. And so we accomplish our mission by providing programs and services to LGBTQ community members that create healthy hearts and healthy minds. We provide direct services to young people and their families to improve communication and relationships. And we have built a center of excellence to assist with providers and organizations across the region to improve their competency, to implement best practices, and to make sure that we're creating systems that can do good work to serve our LGBTQ community members. And I would say that the last thing that we're really focused on and is central to the work that we're doing is to make sure that we're providing capacity support and assistance to a broad range of LGBTQ organizations, particularly those that reflect the diversity of our community. We know that for too long, LGBTQ organizations have not been as diverse and inclusive as they've needed to be. And so we make sure that we're doing all that we can to change that, quite frankly.
You mentioned supporting the healthcare system and perhaps other entities as well in competency around caring for and delivering service to the LGBTQ community. Can you give some specific examples of the kinds of competencies that are in play here and the kinds of competencies that you foster the development of to support these organizations in their efforts to serve the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we engage in this type of work, there's a couple of different approaches and levels that we encourage organizations to engage with. And so the first and most obvious is going to be training. Right? There are so many providers and support workers across systems that just don't really have the knowledge base that they need to have common terminology or understand the experiences of, or even to understand the disparities that impact our communities. And so often there's a piece of this that needs to be a catching up so that people are aware of the health impacts, are aware of the different aspects of both sexual and gender identities, and are able to utilize that in their work. So that's one piece. Another piece is really helping people understand where they can identify some strategic best practices to make their services and their programs more welcoming. So these are things that include doing an assessment of your policies and procedures, making it very clear and very explicit that you welcome LGBTQ folks to access care, and doing that authentically, right, in a way where you're not just saying it, but that you live it, helping organizations understand why it's important for them to make that very public and very explicit, and then also, like I said, providing information around what are best practices for serving community. How can you look at everything from your marketing materials to your waiting rooms to the care that you provide individuals to assure that if an LGBTQ identified person walks through your door, that not only are you ready to assist them, but that you're going to be able to do that with a level of competency that's going to assure a good amount of care for them.
When we've had conversations about LGBTQ youth or our LGBTQ membership at UPMC Health Plan, we sometimes talk about how far we have to go and how far we've come. And I'm curious about your perspective. How far have we come? Would you describe our progress in being just kind of a society and as a culture more competent in fully embracing and celebrating LGBTQ individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes when you're in the middle of this work, you can sometimes lose sight of some of the victory and progress that's been made. And so while I certainly wouldn't characterize us at a place of being at a place where we've achieved sufficient progress, I do think if we look back over the last decade or two, we can certainly look to some really key achievements, both at the national level and then, of course, at the local level here. And I think those are important. We need to celebrate success along the way and use that to propel and continue to push for more change and more things that are needed. And so, you know, you could look back and point to a decade ago, we didn't have marriage equality. Right? You couldn't even get married if you were an LGBTQ identified person. We still live in a state where we don't have non-discrimination protections, for example. And so, you know, you see these wins, they're often piecemeal, and we still have consistent and work that's necessary. And so you have this pendulum, right? It swings both ways. And so, yes, there has been progress and there has been achievement, but but not enough. There's still a ton of work that needs to be done, and especially work that needs to be done to support our gender diverse siblings.
And so as I think about some of what you referenced regarding still a long way to go with protecting LGBTQ communities against discrimination in some fundamental processes and policies around things like housing, like employment protection and things like that, would you say that social determinants of health are more likely to be at play and adversely affecting people who identify as LGBTQ? And is that some of what the Hulaine Wellness Foundation seeks to address in the programming or services that you provide?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you think about the social determinants of health, for whatever reason it is that those disparities exist, that inequity exists, when we think about resources, we know that it's there and we know that it disproportionately impacts LGBTQ identified folks. And then if you look at that even further, if you look at multiple components of identity, if you look to intersectionality, right? We know that this can be even more impactful, that the lack of resources, the lack of support across multiple marginalized identities. So for our Black LGBTQ members, for example, we know that those outcomes often are more pronounced, and more work and more attention and more focus is needed to make sure we're overcoming those types of things.
And I really appreciate your comments on intersectionality and how, you know, there are identities and, you know, places where inequity loom large, that inequities are at play. And then when you're also identify with another marginalized community, like the LGBTQ community, and those two things are at play together, that there's a compounding effect, right? And an even bigger imperative to think about how to address needs and improve equity. And so I think you answered the question beautifully and even went beyond what I was thinking about in an important way.
When we think about the like social determinants of health, often we focus in specifically on resources. And so we think about housing challenges, we think about employment challenges and all of those things. And so that's an important piece of it. But we also have to remember that when we're thinking about this in the context of LGBTQ folks, there's bias that exists. And so that's part of what drives some of this inequity in terms of resources. And I think if we understand the context of discrimination, if we understand the unique stress experienced by people of marginalized identities, then we can get a better sense of, you know, why some of these disparities exist and why there is a lack of resources.
I think that that's really important. And to make sure that I understand what you said correctly, disparities, social determinants of health, as you said, are couched in terms of resources, who has enough and who doesn't. But I feel like you're pointing to the need to also be aware of and in parallel address the discrimination and the bias that is at the foundation of why some folks don't have enough to begin with. They are marginalized communities because they have been marginalized. And that won't go away even if we can reallocate resources in a more equitable way. Is that part of what you're saying?
Yes. And I think it's important to take this perspective on it, because I think so often it can feel overwhelming to try to feel like we're making systemic change. And yes, systemic change is slow and it's painful and it can be overwhelming. But we each as individuals have the opportunity and the power to make small and impactful choices to push against that, to create more welcoming spaces, to do what we can to speak out when we see discrimination. And that's part of why this is an important conversation to have, is to realize what we can all do to contribute to safer spaces in a way that impacts all people.
And if I could take it one step further, because I agree with you, this is so important. It also seems to me that recognition of, acknowledgement of this is important, because even when we're able to gather resources and create service availability for people who need it and who have been denied access to it in the past, if they're coming from a place of having been denied service, having been discriminated against, just because the service is now available, there's seems like there's a real need to come into that relationship with that person with an acknowledgement that that's happened and a need to build some trust to say that's not going to happen this time in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we are reaching out to our communities, you know, we don't start with messaging around how to improve behavior or how to access resources. You know, that's an important piece of the conversation. But another piece of this is building relationships and building trust within community. And so I think it's a different conversation if you're talking about LGBTQ organizations or those who are on the front lines doing the work. We all have to build those relationships and build that trust. And so we're able to do that in some way because we can have direct and authentic relationships with the communities that we serve. Now then, if we look at larger systems of care, whether we're talking about health systems or even just providers, we have to think about this, like, what have you done to authentically build relationships within community? What distrust exists with medical providers? So whether we're talking about the history and legacy of research or marginalized communities, specifically the Black community, not having access to healthcare, having experienced systemic racism across a number of different fronts. And then when you layer in LGBTQ people's experiences and what happened with things like the AIDS epidemic, right? If you're looking specifically at health, you can point to all of these things that have happened across time that have led to a place of distrust, whether it's I personally experienced it or it's within the generations of the communities or within my family. Looking at where we are today, we don't have a lot of cross collaboration between community organizations and larger healthcare systems and providers. And so we have opportunity to really build those authentic relationships that might be able to help bridge some of those gaps. And right. So if we can work collaboratively, if we can do this differently, so that it's mutually beneficial for everyone, then we can start to get to a place where this is going to have a lasting impact.
Well, I really appreciate your comments about how each of us needs to ask what we can do, and each of us can do something, you know, every single day to be more community affirming, to be to promote inclusivity. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the programs that support individuals and families through the Hulane Wellness Foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. We have two different broad areas of service. And so under our Healthy Hearts, Healthy Minds service area, we provide direct access to food. We have on-site shower services. We have toiletries. We have cleaning products, all of those types of things. And this is something that we've really leaned into and stepped up to provide this service at the onset of COVID. We knew that our communities were going to need support and assistance in a different way. And so this is one of the things that we expanded and launched during this time. And so then in addition to those types of things and those specific resources, whether we're talking about bus tickets and transportation or food, we also make sure that we're providing opportunities for our community to come together and engage. And obviously that looks a little different now than it did a year ago. But we're providing opportunities in virtual formats for social groups, for walks in the park. We've done bike rides. We're doing movie nights. We've done silent disco. So, you know, anything that you can think of that would provide a safe way for our community to come together. There's this other side of the epidemic where we're seeing the isolation really start to take its impact on people's mental health. And so we're trying to address both of those things and do that safely. And so, you know, that's really where we're moving and growing, is to make sure we're addressing overall health for all of our community members. We also have a specific set of services for young people and their families. Mm-hmm. And so we have a array of services that address both caregivers of LGBTQ young people and, of course, LGBTQ youth. So for caregivers, we help them to improve communication, to build on their relationships so that they're better able to support their kids, Mm-hmm. And so that looks like groups, that looks like one-on-one supports, some resources, some consultation. And then for young people, we help them build some coping strategies and skills to navigate a world that's still trying to catch up, right? We're doing everything we can to catch everybody else up. And in that gap, we wanted to give young people a toolkit that they could use to respond in ways that are going to be more helpful for them.
How do people learn about your services? How do they connect with the Hulane Wellness Foundation to access these important services?
Well, anyone's welcome to check out our website at any point. We have general information up there. You can also get our phone number, our mailing address, our email addresses, right? But most of our events are promoted and shared through our social media platforms. And so for an up-to-date list of what's happening and when things are happening for those more one-off opportunities, that's probably the best way to get in contact with us. But if you just send an email to info@Hulane, you'll always get a response quickly and someone will be happy to help connect you to whatever it is that you need, whether it's us providing it or whether we can connect you to somebody else in the community that can provide support.
If you'd like to share a little bit about your background, how you came to be involved with this work and what about the work, you know, really calls to you and what you love about it.
Yeah, I often joke with my friends and say that I feel like I finally felt or finally found the place and the work that I was built and meant to do. So when I was growing up in Western Pennsylvania in a very strongly Catholic family, it wasn't okay for me to be who I was. And there was a lot of struggle there. And so you can look at, you know, those disparity statistics and I can point to those and say, yeah, that was my trajectory and that was my experience. You know, and of course my family has grown a lot and come to a different place at this point. But I draw my inspiration from knowing how hard and challenging that was for me to navigate, right? And knowing that within that, I still had a heck of a lot of privilege. And so I want to make sure that I'm building a community where in the future, people don't have to have that same experience. And so that's what motivates me. I want to help not only our young people, but our entire community get access to the support and resources that they need so that we can improve health, so that we can focus on joy, so that we can tap into everyone's resilience and live the vibrant, fabulous lives that we know can be a possibility and a reality for a majority of our community, or all of our community, really.
I did want to ask a little bit about the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, which, as I understand, is the first of its kind in the nation. Can you tell us about the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs and your role in that commission and what it's doing?
Yeah. So, the Pennsylvania Commission was the first of its kind. And so we're proud of Pennsylvania for taking that step. You know, there's a body of advocates who are pushing forward progress across a variety of program offices and service areas in the Commonwealth, right? In particular, I do a lot of work. So sort of our bread and butter at Hulane is child welfare systems and improving child welfare systems. And so there's a piece of that is tied to the commission. There's a health committee. There's a number of different committees and really excellent people who are at the table working to make sure that our Commonwealth serves all of us.
That's fantastic. It's great to learn a little bit more about that. And so thank you for sharing that. Sarah, it's been so wonderful to talk with you. I do want to give you a chance to share anything else you'd like to share with people listening to the podcast.
I think I will close this conversation at least to say that, you know, I think that I would just encourage all of us to think about what we can do to make our communities more welcoming for all people. And within that, you know, we're certainly happy to help. We have a lot of expertise in this area and we're happy to lend a hand and make sure we're doing everything that we possibly can to help improve systems, be able to be more collaborative and to do that in a way that is truly authentic. And so I would just, as a call to action, you know, encourage all of us wherever we are in these systems to remember the power that we hold and what we can do to push forward equity and justice for all, right? And if we do have power within systems, to remember the importance of leaning on and truly and I do mean truly, collaborating with those community-based organizations who are on the front lines, who are doing the work and who do have those relationships. Because if we can share resources and we can share opportunities together, then we can accomplish a lot more together.
That authenticity is really important, and that organizations like HULANE are available to provide guidance and support to organizations that are looking to evolve and that are looking to level up in their ability to serve the LGBT community, where this service is absolutely the rule and never the exception. Well, Sarah, it was so wonderful to speak with you today. I want to thank you for being with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. And if anyone who's listened to this episode would like to learn more about the work happening at HULANE Wellness Foundation, we'll have links to both of those entities in the episode notes, so you can go there to learn more. It's my great pleasure to welcome my colleague, Shireen Hack, to this episode. Shireen, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks so much, Ellen. So excited to be here today. Like you said, my name is Shireen Hack. I'm a program director with our provider network team. I work mainly with our safety net providers. So thinking about our FQHCs, federally qualified health centers, rural health clinics, RHCs, and really just any type of vulnerable population.
Great, great. Well, one of the communities in particular that I know you're involved with, and I'm excited to talk with you and learn from you about, is the LGBTQ plus membership, those populations. So can you say a little bit about how your work is part of advocating for our LGBTQ plus members?
So when I have a public health background. So whenever I think about provider network, I think about how are we working for LGBTQ populations? I'm really thinking about how can we improve access to care for this community? And I think it starts with understanding what are the challenges, what is the community asking for, and then how do we then take action on it so that we can improve based off of their feedback.
So something that you said that I think is really important is part of your work is to understand what the LGBTQ plus community is saying about their access to care, what they need. What are you learning as you listen to the community?
I'm learning how important it is to have everyone along the continuum of care to be involved in this process. So it starts, in my opinion, and this is how I think we've been doing it, is it starts with community feedback and community insight. So hearing from our members, from members of the community, from members of the community organizations that have been doing this work, to share what are those challenges. And I think our role begins with giving them a space to listen. We had focus groups with various populations within the community. So what are some of the access challenges that you've experienced as a member of the lesbian community, transgender community, and so on? And based off of that, that was sort of one of our avenues for listening. We also have a transgender task force. I love that name because it sounds like just a group of superheroes, which they are. And it's a group of our member services teams, our care management teams that are just specialized in focusing on listening to our transgender members. So from both of those teams and both of those insights, we've understood that access is a key issue. And I think that helped inform our work on the provider network side.
There might be healthcare needs that folks in the community have that can only be provided by providers who deliver that kind of care. But then there's also the idea of wanting to connect folks with providers who are going to deliver whole person, person-centered care. And for this community, I think it would be naive to say it isn't still the case, that that's something that they need advocacy for. Are there still challenges there in your view?
Absolutely. I think there's sort of a cultural competency piece. The way that we've sort of framed that piece that you're getting to is it's affirming. So we're looking for affirming providers that acknowledge that this community has a different type of experience. So I think that's sort of the first barrier to access is, am I, as a member of this community, am I scared to go to my provider because it feels like I have to come out every time I have to explain who I am? And I think that can be a very traumatizing experience. And part of it is an educational thing, right? So part of it is we've kind of heard this from our provider community is, you know, I want to do the right thing. I'm well-intended. Anytime I make a mistake is I want to almost ignore the mistake and not own up for it. And let's either make a joke and just, you know, move on from it. And that actually negates the experience for that individual because you're not acknowledging that a mistake was made. Or even if you are well-intended and you want to include me in your community, it impacts your trust with that provider, right? Like you don't understand who I am or where I'm coming from. And who I am is almost a joke is what it could feel like.
Yeah. And that, you know, trust is so foundational to quality healthcare. You know, and I think of health and receiving healthcare as such intimate topics where it really does matter, that relationship. You know, and one of the things that I thought about getting ready for this conversation was I feel like I can trace an arc over the course of my lifetime of movement into acceptance and then also understanding that is completely insufficient. You know, we're not striving to be accepted as humans. We're striving to be, and we deserve to be acknowledged and celebrated and affirmed. What are your thoughts about that? And how do you see that playing out in the work that you're doing as an advocate for this community and the healthcare system?
I don't know. For me, it still feels new. I'm an ally of the community, so I'm still constantly learning. And I think the language, what's important, the values of this community are also changing as acceptance changes. So I think as an ally of the community, it requires constant learning. And I think that's the theme that stayed consistent is, just creating a space to continue to understand what do you mean in a way that is receptive and without bias. And I think it's great that acceptance allows us to talk about it a little bit more. And so we're opening doors for that communication and that connection to happen. And that doesn't mean that all those barriers are addressed.
Your work at the health plan focused on the aspects of our work that are intended to support traditionally underserved populations of our membership. Can you talk a little bit about what drew you to that work?
I'm the daughter of immigrants. My family's Pakistani. And in our culture, it's normal for a woman not to work. And my dad grew up in a single parent household where his mom had to go back, get her education, get her master's degree so that she could support her family. I think that sort of created this foundation for I'm empowered to do what I want to do. And within the context of my culture, I don't have to do this. And so that kind of created this freedom of I want to choose to do something that feels meaningful to me. I've always grown up in a community of diversity, both socioeconomic diversity, racial, language, kind of across the spectrum. And through that, there's this acknowledgement that I have certain privileges and there's things that I have access to. And there's something I need to do about that. I wanted to do something that felt good, that made me get like that I could sleep well at night and something that felt purposeful.
What are some of the most meaningful steps forward you think we've been able to take at the health plan in improving access to quality healthcare for the LGBTQ+ community?
There's always been a theme of humility in the work that's being done in this space. I think it starts with listening, which has always been the theme. And I think what's also incredibly wonderful is as we've included more teams, you know, we've included our portal teams, our IT teams. This has never felt like work when we've been talking about this issue. Everyone has always wanted to do this and acknowledges that there's work to be done and is willing to help. We are listening and we're willing to take action.
What are some of the most important next steps you think we have to take? What haven't we accomplished yet?
So we have this wonderful, incredibly talented task force. They have acknowledged that we need a better system of identifying LGBTQ affirming providers. So it started with a list that we went and did an internal survey across our UPMC system partners and asked for their support in identifying providers that we're supporting. The challenge is that that's not a very consistent definition. So let's try and figure this out on our own. So what we're creating right now is an LGBTQ affirming provider designation so that a member that is looking on our provider directory is able to filter for LGBTQ affirming providers. So they can search for a family practice provider that is LGBTQ affirming that is 20 miles from my zip code. And they're able to pull that list. So in order to have that designation, we need a definition for what that looks like. So our work right now has been working with community partners, with our provider partner community in creating that that criteria, as well as that application process. So I think it's just been, that's sort of our nearest term next step is in updating that information in encouraging providers to apply for that designation. And I think what that information will allow us to do is to then identify where are gaps within our network. So now we have this really accurate or a better way to capture and look at, you know, in this specific county, do we need to build better community partners so that we can have more of a outreach? Like what I think it'll allow us to innovate in communities with community partners so that we can start to address these gaps in access.
That is really exciting. It's absolutely fantastic to hear about how you're going about the process of defining what that is and engaging the community in a major way and being a part of that. And you're talking about how geographically, you know, there could be LGBTQ positive affirming provider deserts, if you will. And then what does that mean for the community who lives in that area? Continuing to change the culture to be one that is LGBTQ plus community affirming. You know, you're certainly working on that in the realm of healthcare, critically important. But I think that's a cultural expectation and a need too. How do we become every day more affirming as a culture? What would you say to folks listening, you know, one or two things that they themselves can and should do to be a part of bringing about that affirming culture?
So I think it's a combination of self-reflection, right? So in what ways am I not being affirming? And then seeking out individuals that are different from you. And I think that ideally there shouldn't be a need for an LGBTQ affirming designation. It should be the expectation. And that it shouldn't be limited just to the LGBTQ minority population, but it should be across every systemic barrier that we've created, minority groups. That to me is what equitable means, right? Like, so I think it starts with this internal reflection of in what ways am I creating barriers for others? And in what ways do I not have those individuals in my own community? And that virtual reality is shaped by, and that virtual community is shaped by sort of values and interests that you sort of inherently had, and it echoes back what you've already put out there. So I think it's sort of reflecting and recognizing in what ways have I bubbled myself off from these other communities, and in what ways is that creating barriers for these other populations?
I just keep thinking about problems can feel so overwhelming because they've been around for a long time and they're huge and their consequences are enormous. But you've pointed out that those problems only exist because we have created them. And that, to me, does two things. One, it follows then what you also said, which is if they have been created by us, they can be removed by us. And I also would add that we're obligated to do so if you want to call yourself a person working in healthcare who's striving to spend your career to care for and nurture and support others, then you have an obligation to be part of dismantling the barriers that are in place, even if you personally never have and never intended to be part of putting them up in the first place.
That's a purpose, right? For why healthcare. I think that's, you'll see that across anyone that's in this industry is there's a heart to it as well. And I think that it kind of goes back to that listening and then willingness to take action piece. So how are you banding together across silos? Because this does, health impacts, you know, every aspect of your life.
The other thing that you've said a few times, which I also appreciate and sort of want to revise what I said a minute ago is, you know, I said a moment ago, even if you are a person who hasn't contributed to those barriers or wasn't a part of setting them up, that you have an obligation to be part of taking them down. But you've pointed out a couple of times, I think very wisely, that it starts within ourselves. And that's what enables us then to be part of the bigger, more coordinated, community-based and population-based solutions. I do want to make sure that we give you a chance. I know we're almost out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to say or share with the listeners of this episode?
I think commitment and consistency requires being hopeful, and that's a really active process. As we've been talking, it starts with self-inquiry, validation, and information from the community for what they are saying and what needs to occur. And really, the ultimate goal is that I think that process should always remain, because there will always be challenges. And the goal is for this to not exist, for everyone to be affirming. I mean, that's utopia. And that's what I think, that's a reasonable goal, because kind of going back to what you had said, that these are systemic issues and they can be dismantled. And I think that's the hopeful part, is that they can be dismantled and we can do that.
Shireen, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. And I'm just so grateful to have you as a colleague and glad that we were able to share this time together today. If anyone listening would like more information about UPMC Health Plan's efforts to support the LGBTQ+ community or anything else that we talked about on today's episode, you can go to the show notes to find more information.
Thank you for listening to Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan. Have a joyous holiday season. Be sure to come back next time.